George's imagination would always get run away, and so when he got off work in the afternoon, he would run out with the camera, and off he would go. And eventually it became a very serious passion of his. And as a result, as my colleagues have mentioned, we've got an excellent historic record of Charleston through his photographs that ranges from around 1890 through the 1920s.
By the time that these photographs were taken in the 19-teens, 20s, it was almost a trademark of Charleston that, you know, you go there and you have these people and they're quaint. You have recordings in the Smithsonian Institute that are very popular these days, which are the songs that people would sing. A lot of people equate this with what you hear in Porgy and Bess, the people that you see, the street vendors that you hear in Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, which is what he observed when he was here in Charleston creating that work with the author DeVos Hayward. So
the was his influence for Porgy and Bess?
Oh, absolutely.
A great deal, yes.
I don't have a lot of images in the South Carolina Historical Society's collection. We have about 40,000 images. There are wide gaps in our collection. Right after the Civil War, it picks up in the 1870s, and most of those are commercially produced. There are several photographer studios, Quimby, Cook, those are the ones coming right off the top of my head. Not a lot of individuals. George Johnson is rare, even later on in the Depression era, to be able to afford and go out and mass produce these plates as he did. But I think what we owe Johnson from this is that he actually captured the faces of these individuals. You know, might have kind of faded into nostalgia. They might become kind of caricatures, but we have their actual images there. And fortunately, you know, not a lot of people could afford cameras. We're photographing individuals of a lower class. They were photographing their family and friends at picnics. So I'm personally grateful that we have these images in our archives because of George Johnson.
Well, and I think to narrate the economics of the era, he took pictures of the hucksters and chimney sweeps, rather, which were very important to the livelihood and the style of the average Charleston family. If you didn't clean your chimney, it would burn down. It was necessary maintenance. We had to eat. And so these people provided us our food and our vegetables. And your upper class gentleman of Charleston wanted his shoes shined. And there was always a young fellow on the corner that was willing to shine those shoes. So we look at him in a different light today, but during the time that these photographs were taken, they were a narration of the sociological state of Charleston, the economic state of Charleston. It was a segregated society. It was very much a white man's society, and these African Americans were here at the disposal of the white man. But at the same time, very necessary for that same white man's existence.
So was there much interaction between them, do you think?
Between the black and white communities?
Yeah, because they wouldn't have normally partied together.
They were not socially interacting, but on a day-to-day basis there was and is tremendous interaction between people of various races in Charleston. I believe it was in the 1960s and 70s, they did surveys, and Charleston, which was in many ways still looking a little backward, more so than forward, but it was more integrated in terms of the cityscape than the city of Cleveland was. It didn't have white neighborhoods and black neighborhoods like you would have in the northern cities or in many southern cities. You had the big house at the front with dependencies going on into the back, and you still had people who were living in those outbuildings, perhaps where their ancestors all the way back to slavery may have lived, and maybe working with or within the same households or with those same people.